Golf Smarter Premium, number 504, published on September 1, 2015.
This episode of Golf Smarter is brought to you by Harry's, for guys like you who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now. Go to harrys.com and get $5 off your first purchase by entering the code GOLFSMARTER when you check out.
The Mindful Golfer, how to lower your handicap while raising your consciousness with author Stephen Altshuler.
This is Golf Smarter Premium. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter Podcast, Stephen.
Yeah, thank you, Fred. Good to be here.
It's good to have you on the show. So the Mindful Golfer, you've written various books with mindfulness in mind. Mindfulness right now is a very hot topic, but it seems to have always been lingering in the golf world.
Yes, I would say so. I'm not sure why that is. I think people are mostly concerned with lowering their handicaps and improving their, their golf form, and without thinking too much of the mental side of golf. But it's a game that involves the mental side, and so I think mindfulness or consciousness is something that has to be attended to and acknowledged.
I don't want to make this sound religious, because sometimes it can border on. The conversation frequently will get back to Buddhism. And the practice of Buddhism, which is a practice, not a religion, correct?
Yes, that is correct. Yeah. It's basically, it's a very practical practice, in terms of paying attention, in terms of concentration. We can all improve in that area, because there's so many distractions, that come upon us, during daily life. No matter what we're doing. And so, whether we're playing golf or whether we're driving to work or being at work, we have to increase our mindfulness, which is being in the present, which helps prevent accidents, which helps keeps our minds more focused and concentrated, more in the moment. I guess that's the way to say it. So, Buddhist practice is not really a religious practice. You can be of any religion to take advantage of Buddhist meditation, mindfulness, increasing your awareness of what's around you. Both the themes of my previous books have been primarily inner landscape versus inner landscape vis-a-vis outer landscape. So we are often too concentrated on the outer landscape at the expense of what's going on inside of us. And so golf is a good venue for practicing both, how we react to the outer landscape, but also how we react to what's going on inside of us. When we're standing there with our ready to hit our ball on the first tee, and we've got three of our buddies around there looking at us, there's a lot going on, both inside and out. And so we have to somehow, there's a lot of distractions, as I said before, so we have to somehow calm the mind, quiet the mind. And that's not exactly religion, although you can apply it, like I said, to just about anything in life. We have to meditate, essentially. That's what meditation is all about, is basically quieting the mind, letting the filtrate of the mind kind of settle to the bottom of the test tube. That's an image I like to keep in mind in terms of what meditation is all about. You're keeping your body still, and you do, when you're addressing a golf ball, you do come to a sense of stillness with the body and with the mind, or at least we would hope to attain that. And then we're ready for the action, let's say, at that point. With a quiet mind, with a confident mind, with a body that comes to even before the waggle starts, your body gets pretty still, or even maybe it's at the maybe it's at the end of the waggle. No, maybe a little bit before the waggle. Your body gets your body actually gets still. I watch the pros a lot on TV, and I see their body still, maybe a little forward press, and then boom, then that's when the action starts. So you come from a place of stillness to a place where you're moving that club about what? Anywhere from 80 miles per hour to 100, over 100 miles per hour. A lot of action involving, balance and involving somehow keeping control of that long golf club.
It's interesting that we're 2 minutes into a conversation about golf and we're already on meditation.
Yes.
Well, there's a direct correlation. I mean, like, there's a sense of meditation when you're out on the golf course, but only for brief periods. You don't have to have an extended period of meditation. But I don't know if most people would acknowledge that they are meditating or if they even need to.
Well, when they, you know, the only time that really meditation takes place on a golf course, I mean, real meditation would be for that moment just before you start the swing. There is a moment of stillness. There is a moment when your mind does quiet. You might have a swing thought in mind, but even in meditation, when you're sitting on a cushion, you often have an object of meditation, even in a meditation hall, a Buddhist meditation. So you still have some kind of reference to refer back to if your mind becomes a little less still. Well, in golf, you could refer back to the swing thought of something that perhaps starts the swing, maybe something at the top of the swing, maybe one or two thoughts. That's about all you'd need in golf. The rest of the time, you might be chatting with your friends, walking in between shots. Maybe you're looking at the trees. Maybe you are looking at the clouds or the mountains beyond. You're taking in all of the external that golf presents. And one of the wonderful things about golf is that we have these relatively violent-free places to play, these venues that are often quite beautiful. So meditation is happening when you get to the shot. Then there's a certain procedure. You have a pre-shot routine. That, in a sense, is a start of meditation. The conversation ends. If your friend is still talking about the latest Supreme Court decision while you're over the ball, you might want to quiet. I have a friend who does that, by the way. He will just keep talking as he is over the golf ball.
As he's over the golf ball, he keeps talking?
Well, no, he does that. He does it when he's over the golf ball, but he also does it when I'm over the golf ball.
There you go. Golf. That's the thing that
so
concerns me.
I have to tell him, you know, I won't mention his name, although I do in the book. Please. I need some quiet here. You know, we'll talk about the Supreme Court later, you know. And so he just gets carried away with those things. But you know, when you get over the ball, that's when things have to get quiet and things have to get still. And you need that power of concentration when you are over the golf ball. Before you get over the golf ball, you need to think about what club you're going to use. You're going to think about the line. You're going to think about any obstacles in your way. There's a lot of thinking in golf too. And I certainly absolutely acknowledge that, as a mindful golfer, I'm also a thinking person's guy. It's a great sport because it does require a lot of thought, a lot of, planning, a lot of, sort of noticing things. You know, you need to notice your lie. You need to notice, how far it takes to get to the green. I mean, all kinds of things to notice. You need to notice any golfers who happen to be walking in front of you. I was just the other day, I was watching my great nephew play in Philadelphia, and he was one of his opponents. Starts to hit a golf ball, and he's got another fellow, a young fellow, walking out in front of him. And he goes ahead and continues to hit the golf ball. So you've got to be aware of any golfers who might be in line of your shot. I was hit by a golf ball once, by a three wood, okay? I was in the woods, and all of a sudden this ball came screaming through the woods, and I got hit in the back. Fortunately, it wasn't a foot higher, or I would have been hurt badly. But it's no fun to get hit by a golf ball. So you have to really be conscious of who's around you, what is around you. My other friend, another friend of mine, when he sees geese, let's say a flock of geese in the fairway ahead of him before he's about to tee off, he will just sort of bump the ball down the fairway. He didn't want to hit any geese. He hit a bird one time and killed it. And so ever since then, he has been super conscious about and mindful about not wanting to hurt another bird or deer or rabbit or whatever you see in the fairway. So that, you know, I think that's commendable. You know, he's bunting the ball, he's losing some shots in the process, but he's taking care of the environment. He's taking care of the wildlife that we see out there. He's acknowledging that, hey, this is not just a playground for people. It's also a habitat, a living habitat for birds and rabbits and deer and, crocodiles in some places, right? Alligators. I guess they're not crocodiles. I think they're alligators. And they're, so you have to be aware of them and aware of your relationship to them. Okay. Golf is a game of relationship. And so is life. It's a game of relationship. It's a journey of relationship. Well, same as golf. You know, when you hit your ball, how do you relate to a poor shot? Do you throw your club in the water like Rory did recently? Or do you say the heck with it like John Daly does sometimes and scores a 15 on a hole? Or do you say, hey, I've made a bad shot. Time to move on. Golf doesn't let you mourn very, very long. You know, it doesn't let you regret shots because what? Why? Unless it's the last shot of the round, you got some more shots ahead of you. You know, you can't just lament over the bad shot you just hit. You've got to walk on. You've got to find your ball, and you've got to let go. That's another aspect of the mindful golf and meditation. You have to let go of the shot that you previously hit, and that's very difficult for golfers to do. So I'll say more about that, but go ahead. I'll turn it back over to you. I could go on and on and on here, Fred. So,
that's what the Golf Smarter podcast is all about. So I'm glad that you're able to do that, and I'm really happy that your friend who now doesn't hit the ball if there's a flock of geese or something in the fairway. I'm glad he didn't hit you with that 3-wood because then he would. I mean. Did the person who hit you, did they know they hit you, and do they not hit when someone's
They didn't know. I was in the woods looking for my ball. They were on the tee, I think they were on the tee. This was quite a few years ago. And they didn't see me. I was behind a tree. And all of a sudden, I mean, they hit into me, which they did, but they didn't know I was there because I was in the trees looking for my ball. And so it wasn't a purposeful thing. They just hadn't taken as much time as they needed to make sure that, you know, that there wasn't anybody up ahead. And that happens to all of us. You know, sometimes we don't see the people that are up ahead of us. But we have to really make sure we keep our eyes open and make sure we double check and make sure there's nobody up there. So in that case, they hadn't double checked enough. But fortunately, I wasn't hurt very badly.
Very fortunate. I wonder what's more random, though, getting a hole in one or getting hit by a ball or hitting an animal, hitting wildlife and killing it.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up because I think that golf is quite random. And I'll explain why. This was 2 years ago, Veterans Day. Veterans Day, November 11th, 2013. I was out playing one of my favorite courses in Petaluma, and played the fourth hole was a par five, and I hit a couple of good shots, and then I hit two very bad shots, and I screwed up a couple of chips and wound up with a double bogey. after hitting a couple, really good drive and a good approach. So I was fuming. I was just fuming with that double bogey because I said, you know how we golfers, we say, oh, there goes the round. You know, there goes the high number. And I'm going to have to get a couple of birdies here to make up for that. And you start lamenting. You start grieving the round in a way before it's even over. But I knew as a conscious golfer that I needed to take some action. So I cleared my mind. I let those thoughts settle. And I let them, as a teacher of mine always says, a Buddhist teacher, all things arise and pass away. But you have to let them. You can't hold on to thoughts and feelings. So I let the devastating thoughts of that double bogey, I let them pass away. But I do have some practice in meditation. I've been at it for a long time. So I learned techniques for letting them pass, breathing techniques. So I come to the next hole, which is a par three, short par three, about 115 yards. So I pull out my wedge. Now I've cleared my mind, okay, and I'm ready for the next shot. I'm not thinking, a lot of golfers will still be thinking about the double bogey when they get over that next shot. I hit the ball very cleanly and squarely. Wonderful feeling when you hit a shot like that in golf, that pure contact. In fact, I think that's why a lot of people come back to golf. Not so much because of the good score, let's say, but because they want to feel that, they want to experience that contact. Go ahead.
I was just going to say it's the one shot. It's like you could be having a terrible round and you have one good shot on the 18th, and that's what brings you back every
time.
That's
what brings you back. So here's the deal. I hit that shot cleanly and perfectly, and what happens? One bounce, another bounce, and into the cup for a hole in one. Okay? Yes. My third hole in one. And so every shot in golf is essentially mutually exclusive from every other shot. Because I was able to clear my mind of the double bogey just before that, I opened myself up to the possibility of hitting a really good, making good contact. Now, I couldn't have predicted the hole in one, but I allowed the hole in one to happen by clearing my mind, by quieting my mind, and thereupon making a good shot, good contact. So as long as I can drop the bad shots and even drop the good shots, there was an example in the European Tour where a guy had a hole in one, and the next hole he had like an 11. Okay, so you have to, in a sense, drop the excitement of a hole in one, because it really can. Excitement and anger and fear and anxiety sometimes are the same neuronal base, okay, in the brain. And so you have to even clear the exciting, the good shots as well, and return to a base, to a default sense of quiet in the mind, to be prepared for the next shot. Mutual exclusivity. I think that's true in mathematics, and I think it's probably true in golf as well. And it could be true in life too, Fred, because, one day the boss comes in and berates you for screwing up a contract. And the next day, that very contract turns into some million-dollar deal, And so you don't know. Everything is mutually exclusive at its essence. You can't get upset. You can't get too upset. You can't get too elated. You have to just take things as they come and be present with the current moment.
I frequently will talk to my friends, we'll walk up to a tee box and they're like, oh, I always screw up this hole, or I always hit it in the water, or I always go in the bunker. And it's like, well, and my first comment is always, well, luckily, history has nothing to do with your next shot.
That's right.
And if you're always screwing up this shot, then why are you using the same club every single time? If you can't do it, don't do it. Right.
Exactly. Those kinds of thoughts, I always do this and I never do this. Those are thoughts that you have to let go of because they will get you in deep trouble. Usually you will do as the thought dictates. The image you create is up to you. If you want to create a positive image, you can. If you want to keep going with this negative thing, I do that also. There's a hole at course in Petaluma, this Adobe Creek that I'd like to play. Very difficult hole and a very difficult driving hole. And I have I get the yips when I get up to the tee box on that hole. And I've conquered it a couple of times, but I'm still working on that. You know, it's still this whole mindfulness thing is a work in progress. Believe me, I don't do it all the time. I don't always achieve what I want to achieve. I don't always let go of what I want to let go of. I don't always I don't always avoid berating myself. I do these things. That's how I write about them, because I experiment with them myself and sometimes say to myself, what good did that do to berate yourself in that situation? It did no good at all. It just was an extra baggage that I needed to get rid of. You know, so I'm still working on holes like that. There are certain holes in a golf course that some you like, some you don't like. I think that you look at the pros in some courses, you know, they call that horses for courses. And that's true. There are some courses they really gravitate to. I think Davis Love, who just won the Wyndham, he gravitated to that course. I think he won two times before or something like that. But anyway, Tiger Woods won a lot of his tournaments because he played the same courses all the time. You know, he'd like to gravitate to similar course, similar tournaments. And that was smart. You know, nothing said you can't do that. So, you know, I think that's good to know on the courses that one likes to play, because you can work on the courses or the holes that you have difficulty with. Work on how? Mentally. Okay, you can also work on them strategically, too. Maybe instead of a driver on that hole at Adobe Creek, maybe I should use a 3-wood, or maybe I should use a hybrid. You know, or maybe it's a long par 4. Maybe I should play it as a par 5. Some different strategy. I think it really, again, golf is a thinking person's game. And I think there's really no formulas. There's no formulas for a swing. You know, every swing coach I've been to has a different style or a different theory. But also different strategies for how you might play a shot. So you have to think these things through. And, of course, a lot of people play the same courses all the time. So there's no reason why you shouldn't really know the course really well. You know, that's how people keep their handicaps low. They keep playing the same course. It might be good to sometimes travel with that swing of yours and see how you do on some foreign course.
I live next to a country club, and I talk to golfers as they walk by all the time, and they're like, why aren't you joining? And one of the reasons, I mean, financially is why I'm not joining, but right. One of the reasons that I say to them, I convince myself, I do like to play different courses all the time. I don't want to, I think that a guy who says that mm-hmm. they're a 4 handicap and they play the same country club, you know, twice a week exclusively, you right. take them out to a course that has a 118 slope and they're going to not break 90. I mean, they just, yes. you know, because they're not familiar with it. Right. I have a feeling I know. So I played Adobe Creek on Saturday, as a matter of fact. Yeah. And I have a feeling that the one that gives you all the trouble is number 7.
Number 7.
Yes, that's number 7. I was right. It was interesting because my friend and I, when we played it, he started out very hot and I started off ice cold.
Yeah.
And the where you got the hole in one on number 5, everything switched.
Yes.
And I was plus 6. Yeah, I was plus 6 by the time we got to that fifth hole.
Right.
And I ended up being getting a bunch of pars, and I shot a 43 on the front. And right. he for the next until the 17th hole, he was doing double or triple bogey on every hole. It was like complete God. Flop. It was terrible.
That is torture.
Yeah.
But you know, you can do a turnaround in golf, as in life. Like I say in the book, like the Buddha said, like the swish of a horse's tail. Okay, you can get a turnaround. You can shoot a lousy front 9. And then all of a sudden something changes in the back 9. That's happened to me at Adobe Creek a number of times, you know, where the front 9 again, I come to that 7th hole and I double or triple it. and have this terrible front nine. But if I can keep my head square and stable and let go of that front nine, the back nine, and I've done this, can be excellent, you know, where I save the score on the back nine. Why that is, I'm not exactly sure. I think there's something called, I just did a blog post called Grace and Grit about Jason Day. It was just this week, actually. And I think golf can involve the element of grace, but also grit. You have to be there. You have to be gritty. You have to be prepared. You have to let go of the bad and be open to the good. And the good can come, the good grace, can come very quickly, very unbidden, unknown. You can be, it's really the kind of mystery that golf can present, and the kind of gifts that golf can give you as well. No guarantees, of course, but it's there. It's there. You see, grace, I feel, is always there. And this can be related. You can relate this to Buddhism. You can relate it to Catholicism, whatever you want. It's always there. We have to be prepared for it to enter. And I think golf, yeah, we can experience grace. And sometimes it's quite wonderful, you know, to experience. But it's not always, we may not always be prepared to receive it. Again, the mind comes into play here. Okay. You know, if you get caught by some of the difficulties that you encounter in golf, and you know, it's a great venue for life, because for during 18 holes or whatever you're playing, you have so many opportunities to deal with what? Failure, okay, with disaster, with obstacles. How are you going to relate to failure, to obstacles? Are you going to go for it all the time? You know, are you afraid you're afraid your playing partners are going to chide you into you're laying up? Is that all you're doing? Well, come on, you can go for it. You have to kind of watch yourself there and play your game, okay? And risk reward, that's what we call it. Well, that's true in life as well. And so do we take the risk of going for a new job? Or do we stick with the old job that we don't like that much, but it's secure? Okay. Do we get behind a tree in golf and try to hook it around it? We don't know how to hook a ball, most of us. So yeah, I saw Rory do that, or Tiger, or Bubba at the Masters. I can do it. I can hook that ball around that tree. There's no way, you know, an amateur is gonna. I mean, maybe a good amateur, a scratch amateur, maybe could hook or slice a ball purposely. But, you know, maybe we need to step back and say, hey, let me take my medicine, knock it out back out in the fairway, and let me go for a bogey here. Maybe I'll get a par. Maybe I'll knock it on the green and sink a putt and get a par. So I think we've got to kind of rein in the ego sometime when we play golf. And that's a good thing, you know, if we're entering a freeway. So maybe sometimes instead of cutting somebody off, we have to rein in our ego, and maybe there'd be less road rage if we did that, you know.
Well, when people say, why is golf like life, I will frequently talk about that golf is just a series of disasters, and it's how you handle it, just like right. Golf. So I guess that resilience is such a, it's something that I always focused on when raising children. Yeah. My three R's were respect, resilience, and I forgot the third, because it's been so long since I raised my kids.
Right.
Responsibility, of course.
There we go.
But resilience is so critically important on that.
That
it's just a matter. Well, and why I frequently say never follow a bad shot with a stupid shot. You know, you can't hook it around the tree. Don't even try. Yeah, sure, you can see the flag on the green, but there's 72 trees in between you and that, and they're all low, and forget
it. Right.
Just get out in the fairway and take your medicine.
Yeah.
Let's talk about one of the things that really intrigued me about what you brought into the book, The Mindful Golfer, which I will put links to on our website, and in the show notes so that people can check out the book. It's available on Amazon. Let's talk about the Four Noble Truths, which is, again, is that a Buddhist concept and how you brought it into golf?
Yeah, it is a Buddhist concept. It basically, you know, the basic Buddhist concept of Four Noble Truths is something that the Buddha actually talked about and gave sermons on early in his enlightenment, after he became enlightened. And essentially, you know, the first truth is the truth of suffering, or another way to put it is the truth of a discontent. We all have a quality of that. And the reason that it arises comes from the second truth, which is desire. We all desire. We all want something. And golf, of course, we all want to play better. We want to get pars or birdies. We want to feel good about our games. We want to feel proud. We want people to high five us all the time. But does that happen all the time? No. In fact, very seldom does that happen. Mostly in golf, we're kind of behind the eight ball. I mean, some of the good players, but even the really good players sometimes do not play the way they'd like to play. So there is an element of discontent, of feeling not satisfied. And so we have to work with that. The next noble truth is there is a way out of suffering. And that way is to watch our minds, okay, is to let go, is to not dwell upon suffering. There's always going to be suffering, as the Buddha said. There will be suffering. But then how do we relate to that feeling of suffering? Do we let it continue? Do we let it fester? We don't have to, in life and in golf. We can understand that all things do arise and pass away. Okay, so even the bad shot that we have and the terrible feeling and the embarrassment sometimes, that will pass away if we allow it to pass away. And then the fourth noble truth is there is a system for doing that, for allowing things to pass away. And it has to do with right this and right that, right livelihood, right meditation. That's what the Buddha had called it. Basically, it's living your life in a conscious way. It's taking care of yourself, but also taking care of the environment around you, your kids, your spouse, your friends, being conscious. You know, my subtitle of my book, how to lower your handicap while raising your consciousness. Okay. You want to do both. Yes, we have this desire to lower our handicap, but we don't want to just do that at the expense of someone else, the expense of the environment, the expense of the rabbit that's running across the fairway, like my friend takes care of. Those are essentially the essence of the Four Noble Truths. It's a living a conscious life, taking care of yourself and the environment. It's not an either or, it's and, you know, it's really the golden rule. Okay. If I had to put it into one word, into words that most Americans would understand, it's living life, as you would want others to treat you. Okay. And so I think that's the essence. That's why this is not an exclusive religion when you say Buddhist this or Buddhist that. You know, Buddhism is a very practical, I'm even hesitant to call it a religion. It's sort of a way of living. You know, one can be a Catholic and live in a Buddhist way, actually. And actually, you know, some of the Protestantism and Catholicism have similar kinds of basic ways of caring for another human being. You can put it in similar terms, actually. So it's the Buddhist way is a way of caring for both the environment, for other people, And again, the golden rule really takes over.
It's a beautiful thing. Thank you very much. So listen, Stephen, I'm going to make a couple of announcements here.
Yeah.
And when I come back, I would like to get a mindful tip from you that we should remember when we're on the golf course. Can you help me out with that?
Sure.
Just wanted to once again thank you so much for your continued support of Golf Smarter and that you have become a premium subscriber. You know, if there's something you'd like to hear more of or less of or topics that I've yet to explore, I always want to hear from you. I want to hear your ideas, and I encourage you just to write directly to me, fred@golfsmarterpodcast.com. And hopefully you're aware that in addition to this audio podcast, we put out regular videos as well. These tips that we now get at the end of each episode, one that you're going to hear from Stephen in a moment, they're on video and can be found at youtube.com/golfsmartertv. Now let's get back to Stephen Altshuler, author of The Mindful Golfer, with a really useful tip on how to lower your handicap while raising your consciousness.
Yeah, thanks, Fred. So I would advise that you play more than you practice. Practice is valuable in terms of learning the fundamentals and in terms of kind of having meditation time, quiet time. But to really learn this game, to really do well at it, you have to play. As Annika Stormsam says, you stand behind the ball at first in a thought box where you're thinking through the shot. You're using your mind. You are choosing your club, planning your strategy. And then once you're finished with that and you're ready, you address the ball and you're in the shot box. Okay. That way your mind is quieting. You perhaps have a swing thought or two, but then you swing away. Concentrate on the ball, concentrate on what you're doing, but not much thought. Once you've hit the ball, you go and find it. You go and wherever it is, you find it and you start the process all over again. No reason you can't have camaraderie between you and your friends, but when you approach that golf ball, you want to be in the now.